This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 92 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut. Now, David Vanderhoof is off this episode. He went through some major surgery earlier this week, and he's now recovering. We expect to have David back in the not-too-distant future. So joining me this time and making her debut performance behind a microphone is Drone Mama. Great to have you here.
Thanks for drafting me into service.
This will be fun. This will be great. So we really appreciate you helping out with this episode. Now, as some of you know, Drone Mama works behind the scenes to get the show notes up on the website and publish the episodes. And you've been doing this for, well, quite a while now, haven't you?
Yes, I started with episode 49, and that was published on July 4th of 2014, last year, so 10 months now.
Wow, it's been such a huge help. We really, really thank you for doing that. Well, okay, this episode, we're going to focus on Smith College in Massachusetts and their unmanned aircraft programs. We're going to be looking at the perspectives of academics who are trying to use drones for educational research, while at the same time teaching students a variety of both engineering and aero skills. And then we've got a few news stories that we may be able to get to if we have time, and a couple of videos of the week. So with that, Drone Mama, are you all set?
Ready to rock and roll.
Back in March this year, actually March 4th, 2015, Drone Mama and I attended an event at Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts. This was titled Commercial Drones in Our Backyards and Communities, How New FAA Rules for Unmanned Aircraft Could Impact the Pioneer Valley. Now, for those of you not aware of the geography in Massachusetts, I guess Pioneer Valley is just that region that Northampton happens to be in.
I think you're correct on that.
Now, this event was open to the public. It was free, and they showed what drones are to the audience, because I think many of them had really never seen these before, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think there was a mix in the crowd, but there definitely seemed to be folks there who it would have been their first time experiencing this situation.
Yeah, so there was a lot of curiosity amongst some of the attendees. I tried to count the size of the audience, and I think it was around 50. So they had a really good turnout, especially for something that really hadn't received a lot of advanced publicity.
And it was rather cold that night, too, and icy. So it was good to see the turnout that they had.
They also talked about the activities at the college associated with unmanned vehicles. They talked a lot about the NPRM and what the regulatory situation is currently.
And I think what was fun for a lot of people is they had some drones on display across the stage. It was in a rather large auditorium, and they had displayed quite a number of different drones, from little teeny tiny ones up to, you know, rather large drones. And the audience could walk right up and see them and actually pick up and handle some of them as well.
And they also had a flying demonstration, didn't they?
Yeah, and that was pretty interesting, too. It was set up on the stage, and definitely looked like OSHA had some part in it, because there were nets everywhere. They definitely wanted to make sure that there were no accidents and that nobody was going to be injured in the audience. It also, to me, was rather interesting hearing a drone flying indoors. You really get, when you watch videos on YouTube, you don't hear the drones at all. They're pretty quiet. But in an indoor setting, you really get to understand the buzzing that people talk about all the time.
And they were flying a DJI Phantom with a camera mounted to it. And they did kind of a fun thing in that they took the video feed from the camera and projected it on a really large screen. I mean, this was a huge screen, wasn't it? The audience could watch themselves being photographed by the Phantom.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. I enjoyed it. I thought it was rather fun.
So this was sort of an awareness building session for the community. It was an opportunity for people to, as we've said, to see these things, to see drones, touch them, and to ask questions about them. Now, there were three presenters at this event.
Right. First, we had Paul Voss. He's an associate professor of engineering, and all three presenters were from Smith College. He's also associated with the Picker Engineering Program at Smith. In addition, we had John Karras, who's the director of the Spatial Analysis Lab, and Robert Newton, who's the professor of geosciences.
One of the things they explained was the research that they're doing. And they're actually conducting this in Belize. And what they're doing is mapping coral reefs. So the students are involved in that. And the use of drones is really not exactly where this research program started.
I thought this was really interesting. As part of the presentation, they showed that they'd been doing this for quite a number of years, but they had been using kites. And of course, the volatility of the weather and the winds and everything, using kites, so there's some days they couldn't, you know, do any mapping at all. And the drones are really, really helping them with this endeavor.
All right. After the presentation and the flying demonstration, I had an opportunity to speak with Paul Voss and John Karras, and we have a short recording of that interview. So we'll play that now, and then we'll come back and make some comments about that.
Well, I think one of the issues is for you guys especially is that research use of unmanned vehicles has been sort of lumped in with commercial use.
Right. Exactly.
And so universities are, and others who want to do academic research are kind of hamstrung right now. Is that something that, you know, you anticipate feeding back to the FAA?
Yeah, that's one of the big, so I didn't want to make this about us. Like, I wanted to make it about what most members of the public would care about, but yes, there's definitely a concern. Is usually research use is sanctioned, you know, and educational use. Those are valuable activities, and we're usually allowed, a little more freedom to innovate than is the case here. So here we're treated exactly as if I was a real estate agent or making money on this thing, and yet we're trying to teach students engineering.
So I'm speaking with Paul Voss and John Karras. And Paul, you're the...
I'm associate professor in engineering. Yep.
Right. And John?
I direct our spatial analysis lab.
And I understand that you guys have recently put together a lab here at Smith College. This is something new?
Well, there's actually a couple of things going on. I teach a course in aerial vehicles design, so we've got a lab with that, with a lot of very sophisticated electronics the students are doing. We're doing work with unpowered gliders, so that's the gentleman here has some product of that, because there's at least a reasonable notion that unpowered gliders are, they don't present the same hazards, that they're going to go into across the county line, that we don't have spinning propellers, they don't go very far, and yet you can do a lot of air. So we've got a course that's very rich and focused on the aeronautics of unpowered gliders and doing very sophisticated control and electronics and allowing the students to dive into that. So that's a piece of it. But what John Karras is doing is in addition to that. And
right. And in the lab I mentioned, that air lab, that's in the proposal stage. So we hope to build this lab kind of a makerspace or a hackerspace where students can build and design drones. But that's not up and running yet. So in the interim, we've been doing most of our work just flying indoors, trying to train for our work in Belize. It's been quite difficult not being able to go outside and do our research.
Sure,
and do
for
our
sure.
Work.
But what are the students interested in?
The students are just, they're wonderful. We have really bright students here, and they love to fly. They get excited about flying with the controls, and they really start to think about the performance of the the platform, the machines, what they can do with them. The students I'm going to be going down with Belize are both engineering students. They're bright students. They can see the problems right away with what we're trying to put together in terms of our craft. We have to build waterproof drones because we're going to be flying out over the ocean. So they're helping make sure these are waterproof, that they're going to float. We're going to be able to recover them if we need to. I think they just enjoy the adventure and the possibilities of what they can do with this technology.
Well, are they more interested in the technology or in the applications of the technology?
I would say both. I think some migrate to kind of the building and how these things actually fly, which is pretty incredible. And I think others want to do good work with them. So I think we have a mix across the board.
One of the things I think is fascinating with aeronautics is it's in some ways it encompasses all of engineering. So whether the student is interested in fluid mechanics and aeronautics, well, there's a big piece of their interest there. And if they're interested in material science, well, all aircraft are all about weight. So we're using the cutting edge composites, the cutting edge modeling techniques to use the least amount of material to get the most amount of strength. And so it's a perfect field for that. If you're interested in electronics and controls and software, well, there's a wealth of work to be done in that area. And in fact, I challenge my students and say, no matter what you're interested in, there is definitely a piece of aeronautics that that encompasses your interest.
So are these activities being integrated into existing programs or as a separate program that's about drones?
Well, what I've been trying to do with the five colleges and the Digital Humanities Initiative, that would be new. That would be a new program, five college-wide, and we hope to incorporate that into the curriculum in certain areas. But it's a brand new program, but again, we want to integrate with what's already existing here and already the good work that's being done here.
And is there funding at the university level for these activities?
This was a five college grant, so we got some grant funding from a foundation.
So you've said five college several times this evening.
Yeah.
Can you explain that for our audience that
so
may not be familiar?
There's five colleges within a 12-mile radius in the Pioneer Valley here. There's the University of Massachusetts, the flagship university, and then there's Mount Holyoke College, Smith College, Hampshire College, and Amherst College. And there's a consortium that works with all five of those colleges on large projects that might be better suited at a consortium level. And that's what the five colleges is.
It's also a great thing for our students because they can cross-register and take, have a much wider range of courses, especially those upper-level courses. It's an excellent system.
So let me ask you one last question, and I'll ask the same question for each of you. We talked tonight about the NPRM, the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, yeah, from the FAA. So when you go home tonight and start to pen your comments to the FAA as to what you personally would like to see, what's the big item for you?
I think the most important thing in terms of getting the public to accept this technology and to have it be safe to deal with some of the security concerns that I raised tonight about this, I'm worried about creating a conduit for illicit activity. I think we need to respect the landowners and we need to respect local control near the ground. That's number one. And number two is sort of much more personal, and that's that I think there have to be provisions to allow educational and research use, as have always been the case in this country. The academic community has been using this technology safely for decades and decades and decades, and we need to be able to continue to do so without undue interference.
And how about you, John?
I concur with Paul completely. I mean, he said it very well. And I think one of the other main issues in the essence here is we need accountability in this. And so that's what's missing in the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. So
all right,
we're commenting on that.
Very good.
I'll just pick up on that. One of the things that bringing landowners and local control, it provides that accountability. In other words, if you see an unmanned aircraft up there, you know that that's Farmer Jones's unmanned aircraft. It's not a random thing with no identification that you don't know. So it brings that accountability in a way that benefits us all and also may allow Farmer Jones to use that technology a little more freely on his own property.
Okay, great. Thank you both. Also, could you just tell our listeners where they could find more about the lab or these activities online?
Mm-hmm. Sure. They can, if they go to my lab's website, which would be www.smith.edu/GIS, there'll be links there and to our five college project there as well.
Great.
I forget the URL for the other project.
And I would give you two places to go. The first is the Picker Engineering Program at Smith College, if folks are interested. In addition to that, a group of us in college and university across the country have put together a safety code, which we think embodies a lot of things the FAA should be doing. It's called the SAO Safety Code for Small Airborne Object Safety Code. So saosafetycode.org, and you can see what a more friendly future might look like.
Great. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thanks, Max.
I thought one of the interesting things about the evening was seeing how, in this case, the university, Smith College, was dealing with this problem that the FAA considers academic research as commercial use. Limits flying to indoors. And in this case, we see their actual research being conducted in another country out in Belize. So it's a tough situation. I hope the rules that come out of the NPRM make some kinds of accommodation for educational institutions to be able to do their research safely.
I think they really do need something that bridges the gap between hobbyists and professionals or commercial use for drones.
Yeah, and a college or a university is kind of a controlled environment, or could be controlled, as opposed to someone who's engaged in commercial flights that could occur anywhere, basically. So I thought that was an interesting observation. The students were clearly very passionate about this. As they mentioned in the conversation we had after the presentation, some for different reasons. Some just love the technology, and a lot of it is about the actual unmanned vehicle, and others are more focused on the actual applications of the drones.
Well, I think an interesting point, a comment that you made when we were there was you didn't see any young men, that everyone who was, the college students who were present in the auditorium were all young women. And I think I'd just like to point out that the undergraduate program at Smith College, it is a women's college in the undergraduate program. So
yeah,
I think
point.
It's great that,
yes.
There's so much interest with the female gender in working on drones.
Absolutely, because I think we probably need more of that. Another interesting thing was the five college concept, that this group of colleges that are geographically fairly close together are collaborating on these things. And I think that's a great way to amplify the learning and the opportunities for students.
It certainly can help optimize your resources when you're not working alone on these projects.
And there was mention of this SAO safety code, the Academic Safety Code for Small Airborne Objects on Institutional Property. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes, or actually Drone Mama will.
And I guess safe to say we will put links in the show notes to all of the websites that were mentioned by both John and Paul.
So overall, I really have to commend Smith College for conducting this this event for the general public, because I think that a lot of people read stories in the news, see them on television. Sometimes it's good things about drones. Sometimes it's bad things about drones. But they, they've never really seen them, touched them, had a conversation about them, and been able to answer questions, or ask rather questions about them, and have them answered by people who are experts in that field. And I think it's a good model that not only universities and colleges, but other groups may want to think about conducting in their local communities, let's help build awareness amongst the general public. I think that's a real positive thing to do. Another interesting thing that came out, I think, is sort of maybe you could call it the academic life cycle for a new technology or a new subject or a new course, in that I think we see a lot of programs now that are kind of built around the drone, the technology. Now, certainly there's applications. They're not just building them to fly them, but to do research and to provide value. But to me, in the long run, when we've really reached a maturity of this industry and of this technology, would be when many different kinds of courses throughout a university, let's say, use unmanned vehicles, not for their own sake, but as just a tool, one of many tools in their toolkits for that particular subject matter. So I think we're kind of in the early stages in terms of integrating unmanned vehicles into the academic environment. But we have a ways to go.
But I think they've made a very good start here with what they're doing today with the five colleges and with Smith College in particular. I just want to mention that in addition to the resource links that were mentioned in the interview, we're also going to put in the show notes a link to the Smith College website, the page that related to commercial drones in the backyard, as well as a link to the event flyer if anyone's interested in reading about the event.
All right, very good. Well, I think we have time for a couple of news stories that were sent in to us by listeners. The first one comes from Bill.
This is rather unbelievable. This is a case, it says, a father chased down and was tased by a ranger for flying his drone in a national park while his young daughter screamed in the background, "Leave him alone, leave him alone." This was a 35-year-old man, Travis Sanders. He took his family to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park on a Saturday evening, and he brought his drone with him to fly over the lava lake that's been building out there. And apparently he heard someone yelling, but he claimed that he didn't realize that the man yelling at him to bring the drone down was a park ranger. He apparently attempted to leave, and at that point he was tased by the ranger while his little girl screamed. And there was people, of course, as is always the case these days, the incident was filmed. He was arrested and cited with interfering with agency functions and operating an aircraft on undesignated land. As I think a lot of people who probably follow this podcast, as well as, you know, any reading it's in the news, that you are not allowed to fly unmanned aircraft at national parks. And that's been prohibited since a national policy was enacted last August 2014. The interesting thing is, if you take a look at the article on the website, it sounds like this seems a little benign. But apparently he was fleeing from the ranger, and where he was running, in the area he was running, there was a 500-foot drop, and that was apparently one of the reasons the ranger tased him, I guess, to
prevent him. So he was trying to protect the guy
from falling off a cliff. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's certainly the kind of a topic that makes for really good sensationalized headlines that people love to click on. Everybody should know that flying drones is prohibited in the United States and national parks at this time for, I think, good and valid reasons. He shouldn't have been out there doing that anyway. It doesn't mean you should get tased for doing that kind of a thing, but if it really played out the way that it's described here, if the ranger thought the man was in danger of falling off this cliff and the only way he could stop him was to tase him, although that does sound a little bit
It sounds rather extreme, but, you know, there's always two sides to every story. In reading further into the article, it sounded like Mr. Sanders was belligerent, and I'm sure that played a hand, too, in some of the events that unfurled.
So don't fly your drones in national parks in the United States. We have another story that came in from our good friend Peter Johnson in the UK. This is London Airport Police to use surveillance drones, and this comes from the BBC. So there's something called the National Counterterrorism Policing Headquarters, and they've been looking at using drones for surveillance purposes, and they believe that these represent a transformative technology. That's their terminology.
And they conducted a trial run at London Gatwick Airport, and it was apparently sufficiently successful that over the next 18 months, police at Heathrow, Stansted, Luton, and City airports will receive drones.
And there's kind of good economic reasons for doing this and reasons of efficiency as well. I think we have a quote from one of the representatives at the policing headquarters.
Yeah, George Tribes from the National Counterterrorism Policing Headquarters said that with the new system, we will be able to carry out missions around 7 times faster than ground-based activity and at around 10% of the cost. They estimate that £1.2 million would be saved over the course of 3 years.
Yeah, very good, very good. There's also some indications in the article that some of the privacy advocates are a little bit concerned about drones performing surveillance missions. I guess that's to be expected. Privacy is something that obviously comes up all the time when you talk about the use of drones. There hasn't been too much, I don't think, in the recent past about where that should go and what the policies should be. I think that's kind of an area that maybe after the regulatory rules start to settle down and coalesce, maybe that the privacy issues can kind of come back in and be addressed really thoroughly. All right, well, let's move on to a couple of videos of the week. Actually, these are both on the same topic.
I think, as you know, most of the world is aware of the horrible earthquake in Nepal that happened in late April, 7.8 magnitude earthquake. And this is also showing the positive side of drones. So often we hear the negative side, like the tasing incident and whatnot. But we have two videos. One is showing drone footage that's going to show the Nepal earthquake damage. This came to us from Todd. And drone footage was recorded over the Nepalese capital of Kathmandu that shows the scale of destruction that followed this earthquake. This particular video was from Sky News. There's many videos out there. I selected one that I thought was interesting. And this is a Canadian relief team using Canadian-built drones. They are actually going to be cross-stitching thousands and thousands of images onto maps that's going to allow them to survey the region. They're using three UAVs to collect the thousands of high-resolution snapshots to help streamline the aid delivery, which is so important at this point in time.
Yeah, we've talked about how the use of drones in the case of natural disasters, things like this, can be just invaluable. And it is really clear in this case, I think, to everyone that through the use of this quickly obtained aerial video of the damage from the earthquake, you could really get a much better sense for the scope and magnitude of this and the impact on the people that live there. Still photography, okay, you can portray a lot of that, but these videos that we're seeing from drones are just really powerful, and I think a good example of how they can bring value in a situation like this. So I want to thank Todd for sending that link to us, and thanks Drone Mama for the one that you found as well.
I should just mention that the Canadian relief team is based in Toronto. It's a humanitarian organization called Global Medic.
Okay, good. Maybe will we have a link to them in the show notes too?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, with that, I think we'll bring this episode to a close. Do you want to tell our listeners where they can find us online?
Sure. You can find us on the website at theuavdigest.com, or if you're looking for this specific episode, it would be theuavdigest.com/92.
I just wanted to mention on the webpage, as many of you know, there's a little place where you can sign up for our newsletter. And I just wanted to bring people up to date on that because it turns out we don't actually have a newsletter yet. What we wanted to do was kind of get a critical mass of subscribers before we started that. And we wanted to take some time to plan the content. So we haven't launched that yet. But if you are interested potentially in receiving a communication from us, something that's not spammy and something that you can easily unsubscribe from if it's just not sort of the thing that you'd like to see, that's fine. Please consider signing up.
But in the meantime, we're also available on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. Or if you want to email either of the guys, you can email feedback at theuavdigest.com or specifically max@theuavdigest.com or david@theuavdigest.com.
And, of course, you can find us on iTunes and most of the other podcast directories. If you'd like to leave us a rating or a comment, either in iTunes or the other directories, please consider doing that. It really helps other people find this show. Of course, we're also on Stitcher.com, where you can stream us right to your mobile device. Also on the webpage, you can find links to a couple of other things. One is some swag. If you'd like some t-shirts or mugs or something like that with the UAV Digest on there, you can check that out. And also, if you'd like to contribute financially to this podcast, there's a way that you can support us in that way, and that's through Patreon. It's very easy to make a small donation with each episode. It's a great system, actually, because you don't get any surprises in terms of charges. You can change your mind at any time. You can change the amount or the frequency or just discontinue completely. And so it's a great little system, and we have quite a few patrons who are supporting us financially, and we greatly, greatly appreciate that. Okay, so with that, I'll say thanks to Drone Mama. So this was your first podcast. So what do you think so far?
It was a little bit scary, but I hopefully did okay.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much. It's been fun. And I'll close this by saying this is Max in Hartford.
And Drone Mama also in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.
And one final comment. David, get well soon and come back.
Yeah. Otherwise, Drone Mama will have to keep doing this for some time. All right. Thanks, everybody.